Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're talking about freezer bankruptcy, Easter treats, and with Molly Watson, author of the new book, Bowls. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week.
Did you hear that cooking at home is cheaper and healthier than eating out?
I did, in fact, and I'm a little stunned. So this is a research study that has proven that cooking at home and eating at home is cheaper and healthier.
I mean, it's certainly not the first such study we've ever seen.
It's true.
And even though it's familiar information, I'm always glad to see it grabbing headlines again.
That is true. I guess I just always feel like, really, we have to devote another study to proving that this is true.
Well, the message has clearly not landed with
that's true.
You know, much of America's eaters. You know,
yeah.
Every year we eat more meals prepared away from home, and people just don't seem to make the connection to their wallet and their waistline.
I think maybe they do, but there are other concerns or inputs causing people to eat away from home. You know, I'm sure that people feel like they don't have time to cook or that they don't have the skills necessary or they can't grocery shop. But I'm a big believer in home cooking, as I know you are.
Well, when the value you get out of it is so high. And as I've been sort of dealing with my not quite a kitchen situation, I've just been making the simplest stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like last night we had a pot of Instant Pot, white beans. What went into the Instant Pot? White beans, water, half an onion, a sprig of rosemary, a Parmesan cheese rind, a handful of barley, you know, and it took, I mean, like it, you know how the Instant Pot does this a solid by like cooking the food and then it just keeps it warm until you're ready to have it. You know, could not have been easier or healthier.
Sounds delicious.
I mean, it really could not have been easier.
No.
Hands-on time was like, I didn't even chop anything. I'm not kidding. There was no chopping. What could be, and then also like, as we discussed recently, just throw a chicken in the oven. Like, what could be simpler?
Yeah. Well, or like I spent a little time last Friday making a big pot of pasta sauce and then ate it like three different ways across the week.
You made that a delicious looking lasagna.
I did. It was so good, but it was like one thing. And then like, okay, then we had it on toast and then we ate it on pasta.
Right.
And then I turned it into lasagna. And it was like, I did one thing and then everything else kind of flowed from that.
I mean, I'm sure the initial sauce took a little bit of time and effort. There was some chopping
there. There was some chopping, but, you know, not precise chopping because I pureed it with an immersion blender towards the end before I added the beef. And it just kind of doesn't have to be precise. But,
right.
You know, I think that the thing that keeps people from cooking is really just the uncertainty. And also, I know I have this experience often when I need to do something that I don't do a lot, where like the mental resistance to get yourself back into the groove of something feels so overwhelmingly hard.
There is a lot of mental resistance,
yeah.
I guess, sometimes. Well, this is one of the reasons why I'm really excited about the fact that we're going to continue teaching classes at the Philadelphia Free Library.
Yeah.
I've heard from a lot of our soup class attendees that they, you know, feel more confident putting together soup now.
Yeah, so, that was a great class. We had so much fun doing that.
And I do think it can help you overcome that mental resistance or feeling like you don't have the skills to, come to a hands-on situation like that. Obviously, we'll put the information on our site. And I didn't bring up this study to try to get you guys to come learn how to cook with us. But the fact of the matter is the return on your investment from learning how to cook in terms of health and money is so great.
Yeah.
That I just think that, you know, people should do it.
I agree. But, you know, it is nice to be reminded in the media and the press that
right.
home cooking is
important. I don't think that message can be delivered enough times.
It
has to be delivered and delivered until people finally get it.
Yeah.
So
speaking of home cooking,
yeah,
what's for dinner or what's not for dinner,
you
Joy?
Know how I cooked and cooked and cooked and put stuff in my big freezer to try to get myself ready for this period of time where I would have a less than fully functional kitchen?
Yes.
It's all gone.
Oh, no.
I am cashed out.
Oh, no. You did a lot of stuff for your freezer.
I know. Well, that's mostly what we've been eating, and it is all. And I've never faced this situation really in my adult life. Usually, it is a delicate balance of putting things in, like just like your bank account, like putting deposits and making withdrawals. This has been all withdrawals.
Oh no!
And now I am declaring freezer bankruptcy. I have to start building my freezer well from scratch. And I almost don't even know where to begin. First of all, I can't begin quite yet. Yeah. But
hopefully soon.
When I do, it's like I have to rethink the whole business of, like, I have to ask myself, what are the most basic things that I need in the freezer or would like to have? Like, there's obviously, I love to have stock in the freezer. I like to have a chili in the freezer. I would like to have that meat sauce you just talked about in my freezer. Maybe you'll give me the recipe. what do you think is required to have a...
Well, I think that it's nice to have some cooked beans. So, like, you know, some bags or some jars of beans that you cooked from scratch that have different flavorings or seasonings in them. So that you can go, like,
that's very handy,
quickly to a burrito or a bowl, which we'll talk more about later. I think it's nice to have, I often have like pulled chicken in my freezer, which is a nice one because that's an easy, like, can go a million ways.
Almost instant.
Yeah.
It doesn't take long to defrost.
Yeah.
My whole my pizza system is
gone. Oh no, your pizza system is broken down.
Yeah. I need to make some doughs and, like, get them all packed away and containerize my perfect portions of sauces. It's like,
yeah,
it's like start, I feel like it's a, it's just like starting over.
Well, it does give you the opportunity to think about what's happening in your freezer,
right, and reorganize,
and be a little bit more strategic perhaps about, like, what, you know, where you want it to be. Like, there is sort of a freedom and an excitement in creating the system from scratch again.
It's so sad though, I open the lid on the chest freezer and it's like, Hello. The emptiness, the echoing. It's like something I've never seen before.
Well, it just sounds like, I think it's perfect though, because you're going to be really excited to be cooking in your new kitchen. So doing a bunch of batch cooking is not going to be hard because you've got all of the space and tools and, like, it's time to kind of test your kitchen out and make it work.
Yeah. That's the ticket, batch cooking.
Yeah.
I suspect that when I put the words freezer bankruptcy on our brainstorming list, you had a different idea of what I meant.
I did, because when I think of freezer bankruptcy, I think of it as something I have to work towards, you know, because I often, like, throw random things into my freezer and then I, you know, find them a month later and I think, oh, I really need to do something with this. And so for me, often freezer bankruptcy is something I'm working towards to kind of use up the backlog.
Oh, you see it as a goal.
I do. I see it as a goal.
Because you only have a small freezer.
I only have a small freezer. So I'm always trying to clear out and make sure that I've used up the stuff. And so sometimes for me, when I'm thinking, okay, I'm striving towards freezer bankruptcy, is, you know, I start meal planning from my freezer. So I'll pull out the random single chicken breast that got thrown in there 6 weeks ago and be like, okay, this is going to be the center point of dinner. Or, you know, I randomly find a piece of pizza dough in the bottom and think, ah, I know what's up for dinner
usually
tonight.
Usually when I do my meal planning, which I'm remembering wistfully now, I will look in the freezer for those things that are have been there a little longer. And I usually will plan my week to use fresher, more perishable stuff on the early part of the week and then look to the freezer in the latter part of the week. I mean, like, I have even run out of my Whole Foods mixed frozen greens.
Oh, my goodness.
It's dire.
Yeah.
But hopefully soon I'll begin to restock. I'll start with, you know, chicken stock and beans. It's natural. And then sometimes I like to keep, like, prepared falafel in there. Prepared by me, obviously.
Who else is falafel would you keep around?
I don't know. You've seen those falafel mixes,
it's true.
Right? Those are gross.
You know, I can also see, you know, like, you had this stuffed cabbage in your freezer for a while. That was
meatloaf, which we talked about just last week. I need to have that having that meatloaf in the freezer gives me a legit sense of security. I know whatever happens, there can be meatloaf.
I love it. Well, you'll have to tell us how you're rebuilding your freezer as we proceed.
Because I know. Back in my old life, I used to every Sunday cook for I'd like to make a dish that was intended to be eaten Sunday with leftovers on Monday. And I would like to do something that was for the freezer. Like, so I haven't done that now in so long.
You'll find your way back. I'm confident in you, Joy.
There's tumbleweeds in there. which... Also coming up.
Yeah.
Easter.
It is. In last week's episode, we talked about Passover, which is, as this episode airs, we're in the middle of. And now Easter is this Sunday.
Yeah. Easter is, actually a topic closely connected with my freezer because I have kind of a small family and I usually buy a really big ham.
Uh-huh.
So often I am eating leftover Easter ham from out of the freezer until Christmas. That sounds bad, but it's actually a really delightful thing.
Well, I mean, a ham has a lot to give, like in terms of you get a bone for stock and you can dice it up and, you know, into soups. And so there's a lot you can do with leftover
frittata,
ham.
Frittata, salad.
Yeah.
I've made like a ham salad spread in the food processor with mayonnaise, which sounds weird, but tastes delicious.
I have had ham salad. I never had ham salad until I moved to the East Coast.
Oh, I wonder if that belongs to us.
It is not a West Coast thing. Huh. It might be a little Midwest, but I think it's also like, you know.
Little East Coast.
Little East Coast. Yeah. What you do not find ham salad on the West Coast.
Anyway, when I do Easter, I always buy a local ham, and my resource for that is typically Fair Food. I can't recommend that strongly enough. Last year, we cooked ours sous vide style, which was really cool.
Whoa.
We used one of those immersion circulators. Yeah. Because a ham is a cooked thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like usually smoked. But doing it in the immersion circulator gives you the opportunity to not overcook it, and it remains sort of moist. But I'm actually not hosting Easter this year.
You're not?
Uh-uh. We're going to my mother-in-law's house. Dan's sister is here from California.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to go to her house. I don't really know what she's making. I'm not really sure what I'm making, but I've recently rediscovered an Easter treasure here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Lore's Chocolate.
Uh-huh.
They sell the most spectacular array of homemade Easter candy, including big chocolate eggs that are filled with like a coconut cream. Dan actually purchased one recently, I guess, just to like test it out in advance of the holiday.
Make sure it was worthy.
He told me when he was a kid, his dad always got one in his Easter basket, but the kids didn't.
Oh, funny.
And he always wanted one. And I was like, would your dad not even share it with you? And he would be like, yeah, we'd get a little piece, but I want my own. So I think we're going to buy some of those to bring.
That's fun.
And I hope another thing that I love for Easter is Pizza Gain. Have you heard of this?
I feel like you have told me about it, but beyond that.
It goes by other names.
Yeah.
Most descriptive is like Italian Easter meat pie.
Okay.
It's like a big dough that you fill with layers of delicious Italian lunch meats like soppressata and mortadella and salami. And
Sounds light.
You layer you layer it with cheese and slices of hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, my goodness.
It's really, really good. Dan and I have made it the past few years. So
oh, yeah?
We'll see if we – I'm not sure what we're going to do this year, but maybe we'll – our kitchen dependent, maybe we'll do that as well. I feel like Easter is not the same type of a – or maybe it's just like the grass is always greener, but I feel like Passover is a more fun food holiday.
Well –
but. I mean, maybe not.
With Passover, you've got all of these sort of rules and avoidance going on. Whereas with Easter, at least, I feel like there is sort of this no holds barred like celebration that's happening.
The candy.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The Easter candy. I'm actually working on a story for the Philadelphia Inquirer about doing an Easter brunch, which will probably be published by the time this airs. And there's some homemade candy in it from
fun.
John Carl. Of Nord Restaurant,
uh-huh.
It's pretty tasty.
That sounds fun.
I know, it's that time of year where you just like eat candy for breakfast and see your blood sugar rise to some seriously unhealthy levels. Yeah. But at least there's protein in the form of
it's
all those
true.
Eggs.
And, you know, it is a good excuse for brunching. And one of the nice things about brunch, to my mind, especially this time of year, is like all the ways you can incorporate all of the like the new vegetables that are showing up. So like there's some asparagus appearing and like new baby greens. And so there is this opportunity to counterbalance all that candy.
Another dish I like to do for Easter, which we will probably have at my mother-in-law's because this is a recipe that comes from her father, actually, is just fried asparagus.
Ooh.
Like just big meaty spears. Bread it and, you know, coat it with panko and just fry it until they're crispy.
That sounds great.
It is super, super great. I love it. So I'm sure one of us will make that.
That's fun.
It'll be a good time.
That sounds like it'll be a really nice celebration, even if you won't have a big ham for your freezer.
I might bring it. I don't know.
Just buy yourself a ham for the freezer, too.
That seems out of bounds. I don't know why. Easter is, like, the only time I buy a ham.
Really?
But, there's always next year. Yeah, it would really help me with my freezer bankruptcy situation. That's
true. You could break it down, package it up.
Also, my sister-in-law doesn't eat ham.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I like ham, but ham is not a language I speak. Like, it's not one of my food dialects. So, I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yes, you would.
I'd figure it out.
Yeah, it's so tasty. And I also might make the obligatory deviled eggs. I feel like that's a must for Easter.
That is true.
It could just be me. But
I have a whole book on deviled eggs.
That really?
A food writing acquaintance wrote it and sent it to me a while back, called Delish Deviled Eggs. It's a fun little book.
How many recipes do you think are in there? A shockingly huge amount.
Maybe like 65.
That's a lot of deviled eggs.
It is a lot of deviled eggs.
I do like them, though.
They are delicious. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a classic. With us today is Molly Watson. Molly is a writer, erstwhile blogger, and content strategist who lives in San Francisco with her husband and son. She's the author of Grains and Greens and the newly released Bowls. Welcome back, Molly, because you were on the show maybe a year or so ago, year and a half.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
You're actually physically here, which is...
I am physically here in Philadelphia for the first time.
It's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
And you've spent a couple of days exploring the city.
Just eating lots of delicious things
glad.
Told me to,
yeah,
basically.
Well, I really tried to give you, you sort did. Of like the high points of good things to eat in Philadelphia. Well, so you wrote a new book.
I wrote a new book.
You want to tell us a little bit about Bowls?
Well, it's Bowls. It has an exclamation point, which is something, you know, the author doesn't have full control over that. And I'm kind of glad because I think I would have tried to nix it, but now I really like it.
It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun. And it does betray, in fact, it conveys my enthusiasm for the vessel.
We all love a bowl.
We all love a bowl.
So where did the concept of this book come from?
I mean, it comes from the idea I just like eating things in bowls. Like, I will put a lot of things in a bowl that a lot of people would put on a plate. So the fact that, and I like eating things with a spoon that maybe other people would choose a fork. It happens a lot at our house that others at the table are using forks and I've chosen a spoon. There's just something very calming about a bowl and a spoon.
Yeah.
Archaic, some people may say, but I enjoy it. Maybe it turns anything into nursery food and comfort food. But yeah, I've been eating food. I think it's my love of leftovers and my abhorrence at wasting food that have meant I've been putting bowls together for a long before everyone started opening bowl restaurants, basically. But it's just a great way to eat lots of different foods at once. It's a great way to use up leftovers and bits and drabs in the, you know, if you're trying to achieve freezer bankruptcy, then making a bowl is a great way to go. It's also, quite frankly, my husband has been on this variety of wackadoodle diets and doing the paleo, like he was a vegetarian and then he's a paleo and like tries all these things. And I'm much more of a everything in moderation kind of lady. And then we have a son who just wants to eat dinner without a lot of hassle and rules about it. And honestly, making stuff that you would put in a bowl makes it really easy for everybody to just sort of assemble the dinner they want to have.
Yeah, it's really flexible and customizable.
It's super flexible and customizable. And, you know, if someone wants to go grab hot sauce and pour it all over it, it's fine.
Yeah. So it sounds like you do cook like this at home.
I really do cook like this.
So you want to walk us through the book a little bit? I noticed it's broken up in different sections and you've got sort of your proteins. So you've got sort of the beginning section is like the building blocks, right?
Yeah. So it opens with just sort of an overview of like, okay, if you've never eaten like this before, what's involved and kind of the different components that you can think about putting together that'll make a bowl seem like a meal instead of like just a salad or a bowl of cereal or things we might think of as being in bowls, but a complete meal. And then I give you a bunch, I think it's like 90, but very short, easy recipes for components that you can put together. And I ended up going pretty basic because I figured, why not?
Yeah.
So there are things like, you know, how to hard-boil an egg. Because a hard-boiled egg or a soft-boiled egg or fried egg can really turn a mishmash of things into dinner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, not everyone really knows how to cook or is comfortable in the kitchen. And I wanted this to be the single resource, not fry an egg and then go figure out how to do that someplace else. So there's a lot of stuff like that. And then also, I think my favorite part of the building blocks is actually the sauces.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's sort of what takes it from being just some random stuff and kind of turns it into a meal.
Yeah, and I think sauces are, can often be the most mysterious to people. Like, sauces, that's something I have to buy in a bottle or get at a store. Or like, I can't, you know, I couldn't possibly make a sauce.
Yes, I will never forget. I was mixing together some oil and vinegar in the bottom of a salad bowl. And my sister-in-law asked what I was doing. And I said I was making the salad dressing. And she said, "You can make salad dressing?" She was shocked. So ever since, I've been on a mission to make sure everyone knows you can make salad dressing, among other things. The nice thing about the sauces, though, is you can use things you buy. Yeah. So it's also a really nice, you know, to keep things really easy, you can always go that direction. So that's the first section.
Yeah.
And then the second section are just suggestions of things to put together, using some of those building blocks or using some bought ingredients or, you know, things that you don't have to do anything to, like sprouts or other greens, things like that. And just lots of suggestions. And my hope there is like, okay, these are things I've actually put together and eaten and they're good.
Yeah.
But also to kind of get people to see that, like, you can just start playing with this stuff. If you're someone who feels really intimidated by recipes or not sure what to do, it's like this is a great way to start kind of experimenting a little bit in the kitchen. And then the last section are recipes for like full bowls, full-blown meals. I will fully admit some of them get a little bit wackadoodle, like a little intense, a little more work than most people would probably want to put into a bowl.
I did notice there was a Reuben bowl, which caught my eye.
I have two of the recipes I'm so proud of because it's like, I can't believe I thought of that. One of them is the Reuben bowl.
Uh-huh.
But you do have to search out rye kernels to make it.
Oh.
But you can use barley if you want.
Yeah.
And that is very good. So it's, you know, a rye pilaf with chopped up pastrami and some sauerkraut. And you make your dressing and throw a little cheese on there. It's good.
It sounds great.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then another one that I was really excited about. I grew up in Minneapolis. Uh-huh. And one of the bowls I came up with is a Minnesota hot dish.
Oh.
So it's wild rice with a little sausage and some mushroom and some greens, kind of. Classic.
Sounds great.
Classic Minnesotan combination.
Yeah. One of the things I like about this too is I feel like bowls have a very hippie connotation. Like people think, oh, I'm going to have a bowl. It's got to be sort of like hippie and healthy and crunchy. And you do have a hippie bowls section, but this is not a hippie bowls book.
It is not. I do love a hippie bowl, but I can't eat like that all the time.
Yeah.
So yes, there are hippie bowls. If you want to make hippie bowls, you can definitely do that with this book. But it's not vegetarian.
Yeah.
It's not vegan. Not every, you know, part of it is you don't always have to have grains. I think a lot of people think of bowls as being grain-based, and they can be, and those are great. But you really can make bowls with, like, beans as the base or greens. I mean, there are a lot of other ways you can sort of create enough bulk, basically.
It's great, and it's fun. And, you know, for those of you, I just recently made, inspired by your book, I made bowls. And it was nice, again, because of the sort of build-your-own aspect. Like, my husband could do what he wanted with his bowl, and I had mine, and then he packed one for lunch the next day. So it's nice because it is flexible like that. And I've always turned to like a bowl based entertainment system when I'm have people around who are like who don't eat a certain thing. You know, it's like if you have people coming over for dinner and you know that one person doesn't eat meat and another person is on a paleo diet, bowls are a really great solution for that.
They are a great solution for that. And I would also like to throw out that even if you don't want to eat out of a bowl, you can use the same concept. Because while I was developing the recipes for this book, as you might imagine, there were a lot of bowls being served at dinner. And my son just got fed up with the whole thing and would put his dinner on a plate ate it just fine that way. He didn't want everything like mished together and he would just eat the food. So, you know, you're not even bound by the bowl,
That's
quite frankly.
True. So I have to ask now, are you on a break from bowls after writing this?
There was a long break after finishing the recipes, kind of the same when I did greens and grains.
Uh-huh.
There was a while there where everyone in the house decided that was no longer a combination we wanted to see for just a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't do bowls for a while, but they've come back. They've definitely come back. And I mean, certainly the way that like my favorite thing for breakfast is leftovers and lunch. I mean, that's how I like to eat. So I will either put it in a jar if I have to take it somewhere or I'll just, and then I put it into a bowl when I get there, or I just put it in a bowl at home.
Yeah.
So definitely back to the bowl the bowl lifestyle.
I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you didn't weary of it so much during this that you couldn't return. And so the book's out now?
The book is out now.
And available wherever books are sold?
Theoretically.
One hopes.
One hopes.
Great. Well, so Molly, thanks for coming to Philly. And everybody look for Molly's book, Bowls! Exclamation point. All right. So at the market, Joy, what are you buying this week?
Fresh cheeses. I think this is really something you're buying.
It is something I'm buying, but I was the one who was introducing it. So spring is here. One of the things that's happening with the arrival of spring is that a lot of the cows and goats and milking animals are back on grass as opposed to the winter hay. And so suddenly we're getting, you know, the milk is fresh and grassy and you're starting to see more of the fresh cheeses at farmers markets. And so I just wanted to throw out a reminder that look for these fresh cheeses, the fromage blanc, the farmer's cheese, ricotta, and that this time of year is a perfect time to get those like light spreadable fresh cheeses.
I do love a fresh cheese.
Do you?
Yeah, that milky, like it's so milk. It's got like, yeah, real distinct milky quality, and usually the texture is just so creamy, yeah, and delightful.
It's very silky,
and there is a freshness.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and if you're not familiar with what to do with these kinds of cheeses, you can fold them into like eggs. You can, you know, before you cook a scrambled egg, you can fold it in and make it sort of light and custardy. Or you can make an omelet and tuck some of this farmer's cheese in with like fresh herbs. If you're looking for like a nice appetizer for Easter even, you could drizzle some, you know, like a fromage blanc with a little bit of olive oil, put some herbs or, you know, add in some like, you know, chopped pickles or some jam, and serve it that way with some crackers or toasted bread. You could use them in like a fresh tart, like a rye crusted tart, and then put some vegetables on top with some cheese. And so like there's a lot you can do with them that's very easy. They don't need a lot to be delicious.
It's also a good time of year if you're feeling ambitious to try your hand at making some of these fresh cheeses.
That is true too.
Farmer's cheese and ricotta are both very easy, yeah, to make, as is the Indian cheese paneer,
mm-hmm,
which I have made and, of course, benefit from nice local fresh milk.
Yeah.
I have not yet ventured into ricotta making, but I want to. Have you made it?
I haven't, only because it's one of those things that takes a lot of milk to make a relatively small amount of cheese. And so I always feel like, well, then what? I would feel like I needed to do something with the whey. And then I'd have this, you know, issue of, you know, creating all these projects for myself. So I've talked myself out of it, which is ridiculous. I should do it.
Well, you got to do what you feel. I think it's there true. Are things that you can do with the whey, like simple things. Like I think you can use it to water your plants.
That's true. Yeah, or you can bake with it, or and if you don't want to make your own, I do know that you can get some local freshly made fromage blanc from area cheesemakers. You'll see it at your local farmer's market or at De Bruno Brothers or around the city. So make sure to look for it if you don't want to make it.
It's a nice treat.
Yeah. And it's easy, and it's you know, it's a sort of a blank slate.
So it does really go sweet or savory.
Yeah.
I like it with jam, not just because we're friends.
It is good with jam, or honey. Drizzled with honey is also really good. So, yeah, look for these things. Try them out. Explore the world of fresh cheeses that spring brings.
And I think that's it for this week's edition of Local Mouthful. Thanks to Dan Call for editing the show and Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo. Thanks to Raina Rose for providing the music and to Philly Cam for providing our studio space. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please subscribe via iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.